Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Bonna Pfeiffer.
You are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for the fine art needle hobbyist creator. Yeah, that person. And our guest this week, the editor and owner of Punch Needle and Primitive Stitcher magazine, Deb Yoakum. Hi, Deb.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Vanna. How are you?
We're doing great.
That's right.
Good.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we're just going to talk about magazine production for an hour. That's how it's going to work.
Oh, boy. Okay.
No, we aren't.
That could go on for days.
No, we aren't. No. I live it too much. We're not doing that.
Go.
Yeah. And this show, new sponsor, The Attic Needlework. Gene Lee, The Attic, sponsoring this show. So thanks to Gene for supporting us. I guess I'm the only one of the three that's been to The Attic. Is that right?
Yeah, I've never been, but it's on my bucket list.
Yeah.
Mine too.
Well, I've been there several times, and it's a destination shop. There's no doubt about it. It's a destination shop, but it's like two shops because it's as much a museum as it is a needlework shop.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you could spend hours going around that place just looking at all the models and all the original samplers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a treat just to go in there and do that. And then I dare you to do that and not buy something.
Yeah. I haven't even gone there, Gary, and I'm buying stuff there.
Now that shocks me.
I know it is shocking.
Just shocks me. Yeah. Cause let's see, your most recent one is Ann Rayner, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Jean listened to our Sampler Sunday and she heard that Ann Rayner was my unicorn pattern and she sent it to me. And when I got it this week, I just got it since this week or Monday, and I called her the very next day and I got it kitted with the silks and the linen.
Your willpower amazes me.
I know it is shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, because you get a chart like that and then you'll sit and think about it and plan and everything for like 30 seconds and then order. Yeah.
Then it's like look up the Attic Needleworks phone number and dial it in and call.
Yep. See, that's what it's so impressive because your willpower. I don't have that kind of willpower. No, it's impressive. Yeah. Oh boy.
But the ladies are so nice when you call and talk to them. They just like get you all set up.
Yep, they are great there. I mean, Jean's fantastic, but the other ladies are great because I was there one time, and that's how the platinum linen that I'm using for Sarah B. That's where that got pointed out because I was looking for an off-white linen and one of the ladies there said, well, you should look at this platinum because I really like it. And she got that out and that was it for me. Yeah. But that's
you know, awesome.
Yeah. And that's the other dangerous part is the linen collection there is frightening. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's funny when I called to get Ann Rayner kitted up, she's the lady that I spoke to and I forgot her name, sorry.
A professional would have written down the name. Yeah.
I know, right. I remembered it. But, you know, my head is like a sieve. Anyways, when I called, all she did was she said, what do you want? Or, you know, well, not what do you want, but, you know, how can I help you? And I said, I want to get the Ann Rayner kitted. I have the pattern, and I want to get it kitted with the silks and the linen. And she said, do you have any specifications, like what count? And I said, I want it 40 count. And she goes, what about color? And I said, I'm just going to leave that all up to you. And so I gave her my credit card number. And when it arrives, I know it will be wonderful.
Surprise.
Yeah, it will be a surprise, especially since I told you that I said do silks. Go ahead, yes, and do the silks. And remember, I said there was 27 colors.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Next time you might want to do a head count on the silks before you order. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, well, whatever. It's just, you know.
Yep. But that's going in there. I mean, that's what it is the it's a museum. And then, of course, every thread, tons of linen and all the other doodads and goo-gahs that go with it. I mean, it's this huge store. And then, of course, she's got a full slate of programs all the time. And The easiest way, I tell you, even if you don't go to the attic, get on the list so you get the newsletter.
Yes.
Because that newsletter, I don't think anybody does a newsletter at that caliber.
Nope. Yeah. I agree.
And then
it's like a mini magazine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the most recent one is, I think, 29 pages. Yeah. Just nobody does it. And then, you know, that's like a shopping catalog in itself, because there's just a ton of pictures. There's more pictures than copy. So you get all kinds of ideas and get to see all kinds of samplers and other cross-stitch and needlework charts. So, yeah, just get the website. You know, it's a weird thing because the website is really, I mean, she doesn't even bother with it. So you just go to the website for the Attic Needlework, and then you just go to the newsletter and subscribe there and download that thing. And then it's a monthly little magazine to read. Yeah, it's fun.
It is. And you know what my favorite part of it is seeing the stitcher days that they, and she takes pictures of the stitcher, of the different projects that the stitchers that come to the stitch in days. That's my favorite. And there's a wide range of like what, it's not all samplers. It's other things too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just lovely. It's a lovely newsletter. Great. Yep.
And then events that are open coming up in on November 15, there's a workshop with Mary Cox, and there are a few slots open. And then January 2020, which would be the next January coming up, as I look at the calendar, January 17 to 19 is a sampler symposium. And she has Jeanette Douglas, who I'm a big fan of Jeanette Douglas.
Yeah.
Sherry Jones. And then there is a sampler tour at Vicki LoPiccolo Jennett's house. And Vicki is Needlework Press. And we did a video. Vicki and Megan were guests.
Last Sunday.
Yeah, when this gets posted, though, it'll be like 4 or 5 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I have been to the Jennett house. And, yeah, there's another museum full of really cool stuff that you could spend all day looking at. So going to this symposium and getting to go to Vicki's house is worth it. And if you get tired of samplers, grab her husband, and he'll give you a history of Arizona, which is also fascinating.
Oh.
Yes. That man knows, like, everything. So that's, you know, just grab him, and he'll tell you all about it. It's great. Yeah, there's more to Arizona than just desert, by a long shot. See how helpful I am?
You know? You are very helpful. Yeah. That's, you know, that's why I like you.
Okay. Noting that. And then August 2020, dates to be determined. Nicola Parkman is back there with a couple of samplers that have not or will not have been taught anywhere. So that's good. And then Mary Lee is available. The new hats sampler, Mary Lee 1793, is also available at the attic with threads and linen and all of that. So there we have it. Thanks, Gene.
Thank you, Gene.
And Vonna will have Ann Rayner done by the end of August.
I want to see that one.
Yeah, right.
She's got nothing but time. Nothing but time. Okay, Deb, I have two questions.
Sure.
Well, I have more than that, but I have two. Punch needle and primitive stitcher. All right, now Vonna helped me a few weeks ago, but I still have that dumb guy question. What is this primitive needlework? How do we find that? Define that.
How do you define it?
Yeah, and then the other question, punch needle and primitive stitcher, which is basically cross stitch, in the same magazine. Seems like two ends of a pole, so I'm curious to why you did that. But first I need to understand primitive. What is this primitive design?
Okay.
How do
primitive design is pretty much something that you want to figure that it's aged. It's more simplistic. There's not a lot of cuteness to it. I want to say it's just really a simple design in a lot of ways. And there are samplers that are considered primitive. They use letters, numbers, dates are a big thing. You'll see the 1800s, 1700s, whether or not they apply. They're included in the design just to kind of give it that aged feel. A lot of the colors are very muted. They're not very bright. And I think Classic Colorworks has a beautiful primitive palette. So the colors are just really softer. So they kind of have that older look to them. And like I said, it's just very simple, simple designs. I think that's, and the fabrics are aged. A lot of times the designers will, they'll stain the designs, they'll coffee or tea dye them, they'll spray them with like a walnut spray, which does some antiquing just to give it that aged look.
A walnut spray, like a paint?
It's actually done like with, somehow done with crushed walnut shells. And then they liquefy it. And there's actually a company, and I can't think of the name of it right now. It's slipping my mind, but they actually sell it in a spray bottle. And you actually spray it onto your fabric, your linen fabric. You can do it before or after you've already stitched the piece. And it gives it that mottled look to where it just looks like it's been sitting in somebody's attic for years. So just makes it a lot easier. Me, I prefer to do a coffee or tea staining, you know, myself, and then bake it in the oven, and then it's good to go. But the spray works really nice too. That usually works better if you do it after the piece has been stitched and you want to age it more and mute the colors even more. The spray works really well.
Hmm. Now see, I'd have trouble with that. Have you ever done that, Vanna?
No. And it's how they make it, from what I understand, is they take the crushed walnuts and or just walnuts, and you put it like a tea, like you set it in water, and it sets and like, you know, gets very dark that way, I think.
Hmm.
Over time.
Hmm.
No, I've never done it, but yes, I mean, a lot of people do that.
Yeah. So Deb, so you just do right the threads and everything. So finish the piece and then make it dirty.
You can. Yeah. And some people prefer to do it that way. Others just want to do the fabric and they'll use, you know, they'll use the threads that, you know, as they are. But a lot of other stitchers like to even age it even more. And they'll use the spray and spray the finished piece once it's done, threads and all.
Hmm.
You know, so, and you'll see a lot of houses and letters and numbers in the primitive designs, a lot of florals. And I think a lot of them, and Vanna can probably jump in on this too, you'll see a lot of them pulled from different samplers. A lot of the motifs that sometimes turn up in primitive designs are ones that you'll see in samplers that have been done.
Yeah.
You know, you'll see people pulling from that, but houses are real popular. Sheep are very popular. we're seeing a lot of sheep. Sheep are very popular, and just that more historic sense. You know, you're seeing a lot of patriotic stuff that's considered primitive, where it's flags and Betsy Ross and George Washington and those kind, Abraham Lincoln, those type of things.
Now that's interesting, because that's one thing I think that people miss out on with samplers is taking the motifs and making them into their own into a standalone piece.
Mm-hmm.
So I could go right down the primitive path simply by doing that.
You could. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You sure could.
Yeah. And I think, Deb, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like there's like almost two types of primitive. There's like the, I drug it through the mud, stomped on it, put it, drug it behind my horse.
Yep.
There's some that's, it's primitive, but, and maybe a little grungy, but not like, you know, defiled.
Right. Exactly. Way. Yep. Nope. I totally agree with you. Yeah. Totally agree with you on that. Yep. Yep. I mean, there are some designers and, you know, they'll do, you know, and I mean, I've called it that. I've called it grunge work because, I mean, that's what it looks like. Mm-hmm. It literally looks like you took it out in the yard, stomped it in a few muddy puddles, let it dry, and there it is.
Yeah.
And then the cleaner version is where they use you'll use the really pretty fabrics, the hand-dyed fabrics and that to give it that aged look, but not the grunge look.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Yeah. I would go in that second category. Yeah. I'm not,
Me too. I'm not a real big fan of the grunge look myself.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No, I'm the same.
If I spend that much time stitching something, I'm not dragging it through the mud.
Right.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. But I suppose if you could stand that, you could get pretty creative. Yeah.
Oh, you could. Mm-hmm. Yep.
No, I'm not messing up the stitching like that. No.
No.
No. And just, looking through two or three of your issues, it really, there's a lot of simplicity to these things. I mean, they're not.
Yes.
Not real intricate designs at all. So, and they all seem to be fairly small. Am I right?
Most of them are. Most of them are smalls. For the most part, I want to say they're usually in the 4x6 to 5x7 range, and that's finished, depending on how the designer has chosen to finish them. And some of them are so, and some of the most simplest ones are the most popular. And I think what draws people to that, or some stitchers to that, is the fact that they can sit down and in a night or two nights, maybe three, less than a week, can finish something, can finish a project and be done with it. And it doesn't take months, doesn't require, 20 some different thread colors. So they that's why I think a lot of them too like that particular style of stitching.
Mm-hmm. And typically stitched on linen, or does it matter?
Typically stitched on linen. I think if it looks just as nice on Aida, I mean, we're seeing a lot more, and I saw this at StitchCon when we had the annex where they had a lot of the trunk shows and stuff there. We're seeing a lot more Aida fabrics that are being hand-dyed and coming in to kind of, because there are quite a few stitchers, I was surprised, that still stitch on Aida. I'm one of them for certain projects, especially if I'm stitching on black. But we're seeing a lot more fabric companies that are starting to hand dye Aida. So you're able to get some of those same aged looked fabrics in an Aida and a smaller count Aida if you wanted to use that. But the majority, I'll say, will stitch on linen.
Yeah. Yeah, who was that? Was it, I want to say R&R, but I did a video at Nashville where they had an array of Aida, and it was so soft.
Picture This Plus.
Yeah, Picture This Plus. Thank you. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it was so soft because I'm so used to Aida being such a stiff fabric. And,
right.
And
yeah.
Theirs was soft and just had a real nice hand to it. And it was the kind of thing where, wait a minute, I'd actually stitch on that. That feels like cloth, and it was dyed a million different ways, but that was the first time I'd seen Aida that wasn't almost board stiff.
Right, and Under the Sea Fabrics is another company that does that as well, and it's so soft, you'd almost think you're holding a Joblin or something in your hand. I mean,
right.
it's just very, you could hand stitch it. You could hand stitch it even out of a hoop if you wanted to. That's how soft they were. So we're seeing that come through a lot more too.
Yeah. You could hand stitch it, Vonna. Think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She isn't going to think about it.
She's not going to think about it. You know, I was surprised at how many people are stitching in hand. I mean, I'm amazed that people can do that. I can't.
I think that there's, because of floss tube, that's been like this new thing that, oh, you know what I mean? I'm going to stitch in hand, mm-hmm. and I'm going to do the sewing method, and I'm going to get stuff done. I feel like there has been a renaissance. I know that there's always been in-hand stitchers. I'm not saying that because of floss tube, but I think it's been resurrected or introduced to people.
Oh yeah.
You know, okay. and now this, it's like, this new, new thing to attain in your stitching life is to stitch in hand.
Yeah. Not me. I'll stick with my hoops and my Q-snap. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
My
yeah.
Simple frames.
Well, but I think it's interesting. If it's a trend or a thing for people to do, that's one thing. But it's also interesting because we get so wrapped up in having our Q-snaps and our hoops and our stands and everything, and that we forget that you can do really good needlework with just a needle thread in your hands.
Oh, you can. And I mean, the stuff I saw what some of these ladies were doing at StitchCon is unbelievable. I mean, I'm not talking simple pieces. I'm talking huge samplers, and they're stitching them in hand, and they're gorgeous. It would take me forever to be able to stitch like that. I think I'd get frustrated and say, nope, not doing it. Pull back out my hoops and my frames and I'll be good. I admire those again.
Yeah. I think my hands would start hurting after a while. I wouldn't. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my hands hurt and my arm, and then I hold my hand too tight and it'll start cramping. And I mean, I can do it. I just don't prefer to do it that way, you know?
Pain free stitching if you can.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me about StitchCon a little bit. Was that a lot of people there, right?
400. This is probably, and I'll tell you what though, it didn't feel like there were 400 people. If you imagine, it was held at the convention center in Sharonville, Ohio, which was a very nice venue, and it was put on by Keepsakes. They do it. This is the second year, I believe. And it is a people were coming from all over the country. We had people from Canada, from Hawaii, from all over that flew in and converged on this little town for this stitching event. We were all in one room, one big room. And they had set up 8 top tables, and there was enough space to walk around between the tables, but it was just so wonderful. Everybody there was so nice, was so welcoming. And it was basically an event to bring floss tubers and stitchers together. That's kind of the theme. And they give you out a little passport when you get there with little tidbits about each of the floss tubers, and you had to try to find the floss tuber, and they'd give you a sticker if you found the right one to go with the right little quote. But everybody, they had a brag table where people brought their stitching, and it was gorgeous. There was a little shopping annex where they had several trunk shows by a lot of top designers. That was just amazing. And they had the Stitchy Bus, and the Stitchy Bus was a project by Barbara's husband, who owns Keepsakes. They bought an old school bus, converted it, and that Stitchy Bus drove people back and forth from the convention center to the hotels to the shop. But yeah, 400 stitchers in one room, all talking, sharing their work, sharing their stitching stories. It was just amazing, but you did not feel like you were in a room with 400 people. That was the awesome thing about it.
Hmm. See, that translates to just an incredible din of noise to me. Not so, huh?
It really wasn't that bad. It really was not that bad. And then they had late night stitching rooms open at the other hotels that some of these ladies were stitching till 2-3 in the morning. Not me, peace out at 10 o'clock, I'm in bed. but they were doing it. And it was great. The Smalls Exchange, picture doing a Smalls Exchange with almost 400 people.
Holy smokes.
And they had this, it was so smooth, Gary, so easy. It was just amazing. And you made a lot of new friends and talked about a lot of things, learned new things, met a lot of people. And there is a waiting list for this thing for next year. I mean, they could probably easily get 800 people easily, but they're topping it at 4. They're going to keep it at 400. But if anybody has any interest in going to that, if you want to, definitely put it on your bucket list, because it's an amazing event to go to.
So actual stitching gets done, because see, I don't take stitching to Needlepoint Guild meetings anymore, because I just hauled a bunch of stuff just to haul it home, because I'd never get to it.
Oh, no.
So people were actually doing stitching
all day, all night. It is stitching. You're sitting at your tables, you're talking with stitchers, you're sharing your work, you're stitching away as you're doing it. Oh yeah, lots of stitching got done. And every time somebody got a finish, they got to go up and ring the bell in front of the whole room and show their piece. And it was really nice. Mm. It was really a nice event. Very well done and a lot of fun.
Sounds exciting.
Mm-hmm. It was. We need to get out of there.
I will say that from everything that I've heard, and let's be honest, that's all we've heard for like a month is about StitchCon. And really for the last year, a lot of that's all you heard was about StitchCon. Mm-hmm. I will say that I was impressed, being that I have been to several different retreats. I was impressed at how it appeared that the Smalls Exchange was done so smoothly, and that everybody got to meet who the person was that gave, you know, that they received their piece or whatever. And that's a real stickler with me when I have been to a retreat, and it's happened to me personally twice, where I've done to, I, you know, I've stitched something for a retreat, and I've, you know, everybody that stitches, you put your heart and soul into the stitching,
oh,
into
yeah.
the finishing, and you want to, you're thinking of the person that's going to receive it. And it is very disheartening to me when it's done so lackadaisical, so slap shop, that you don't even, you can't even see who got your piece or meet the person whose piece you received. And that's happened to me twice at a retreat. And I, it was the same retreat that I went to, and I won't go again. And it was handled like, we were all standing in a corner, and, you know, numbers were called, and you went and got it, and it was just a mess. And I never did meet the person who got mine, and I tried to find the person that I got, but, you know, it was just a mess. And so that impressed me with 400 people, and it seems like everybody got the place, you know, got to meet the person who got their theirs, and got to meet the person whose they got. I thought that was fabulous that you,
it was. And how they did it, real quick, how they did this was because they had so many people. When you checked in and got your welcome bag and everything, everybody drew out a poker chip. On that poker chip was a number, and it was a color. So there were four colors, and all four colors numbered 1 to 100. And so what they did is they split it up between the 3 days of the retreat, where at this time the blue chips were called, at this time the, you know, the green chips were called. And so as they called your number, you went up and you got your small. Now you took it back to your table and you opened it. And then after everybody did that, they had everybody then congregate in one area, so you could find the person that made it for, you know, that you made, that made it for you, and you got to meet them and take pictures with them and thank them personally. And it worked like a charm. It was so wonderful.
Yeah. That's it. It sounded like it was. And from everything that I've seen and pictures I've seen on Instagram and FlossTube and everywhere, it looks like it was a very smooth operated retreat, and that Smalls exchange was awesome. And the Stitchy Bus was obviously a big hit. And what a, and what a thing to do, you know, to buy a bus, you know, basically, essentially for one retreat, I guess, kind of, really, that's what it is. I mean, I know it's theirs now, but I mean, they basically bought it for just the Shuttle StitchCon people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And most of the people that were there are out of town. You're flying in. You don't want to have to rent a car if you can, you know, save that expense. So what a great, you know, convenience that was. I mean, you have to give your hand, you have to tip your hat at the whole team, and, you know, the cross stitch shop that got it all together, because it does indeed look like a fabulous retreat and a fabulous experience.
It was. So we need to get Fauna there.
I don't know. 400 people makes me a little itchy, to be honest with you.
Oh, you know what? You do fine, though. Like I said, I thought that, too, because I'm not real big on crowds. Mm-hmm. But I really didn't feel like I was just stuck in the middle of this big crowd. And I didn't know anybody when I went. Nobody. Mm-hmm. So I was a little apprehensive about that, but you are in that position where you don't know anybody for all of 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And especially you. Vada would need her own room. there would be so many people who would be so excited to meet you. It's an amazing, amazing experience.
Yeah.
And I'm going back next year for more. Yep.
Is that the first retreat that you've been to, Deb?
That's that big.
Yeah, I was just wondering because, you know, every retreat has its own flavor. And
I've been to smaller ones. I've been to a few smaller ones, which were nice. Not anywhere near as welcoming, though, as this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's everything. Every retreat's a little different. Every retreat is special in its own way. And I've had a good time at every retreat I've gone to, but this one by far, I have to be honest and say it was my favorite so far.
Yeah. Well, and I must say it did look like it was very, you just as an outsider looking in, you could see that they were very welcoming and it was, and I mean, and whenever a bunch of stitchers get together to just you know, a group of people that like the same things or passionate about the same things, of course there's going to be a good vibe coming off of it. And with as many people as were there, how could you not like feel like you're on top of the world after you come home from something like that? You know, I'm certain it was wonderful.
It was. And like I said, the whole premise was behind it was bringing floss tubers and stitchers together. Mm-hmm. So I believe there were close to 90 floss tubers that were there. So people who are used to watching the videos and watching their favorite floss tube videos finally got to meet in person the people mm-hmm. behind them. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really exciting for a lot mm-hmm. of people.
Okay, yeah. There you go, Vanna. Now you got we gotta get Vanna her own room. See, this it always becomes a thing, see. There'll have to be a nameplate on the door and everything. It's just a thing. Something. Somebody to check people in and out, and it'll just be a thing. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. It'll be a stall in a bathroom, that's what it'll be.
Oh, they probably follow you in there too, Vanna, let me tell you.
Stall in the bathroom. She's in stall number two. Come on in.
There you go.
Okay, oh, gotta get back to my dumb guy questions. Now, I know nothing about punch needle, and I'm gonna count on a bunch of people who are listening also knowing nothing. So tell me about punch needle. Obviously there's this needle with a handle on it, and you must punch something. We work
a needle with a handle on it.
A needle with a handle on it. Well, there's different types of punch needles.
Of course, there is.
There are the ones that are all plastic that you can get at your retailers, and then there are the more expensive ones, like that have been around for a long time. There are the Russian. It actually started out being called Russian punch needle, and there's a really expensive set of Russian needles, punch needles. I cannot even pronounce it. I'm not even going to try. But they're very tiny. They're very small. And then you have like CTR is another one where you have different size needles and you have to insert different like plastic pieces to get the needle heights. And then you have the Ultra Punch, which is probably, I'm going to say, for a lot of people, the punch needle of choice. That is the one that I like to use because it's the shape and size of a pen. So it's thicker, it's easy to hold in your hand, and all the needle height adjustments are done in that one piece. So there's no separate parts. It's really easy to use. I think the hardest thing with punch needle is actually threading the needle. Once you get past that, it's not that bad. But it's very sharp. Needles range from very small for fine work up to large to where you can punch up to like an eighth of an inch ribbon with it, which is really a lot of fun if you want to do some 3D stuff. So the punch needle in and of itself, not really expensive. I mean, the Ultra Punch runs, I want to say, around $25 to $26 for the needle and then the set of the additional needles and threaders that come along with it. It's a lot of fun to use, So you'd have the punch needle apparatus, and then
So needle height. So what are we doing with that? What do you mean? Okay.
So the needle height is you want to set how high or deep of a pile you want on your loops, because when you're doing punch needle, you're actually punching from the backside. So that the side you're working on that you're actually punching with the needle is the back side.
Oh.
And the opposite side is the right side. That's the finished side. So you're working basically back to front when you're doing punch needle. And so the needle height gives your design depth. So if you set it, for example, like the Ultra Punch has 12 settings, I believe. So when you start off on setting number one, the loop height is going to be very short. So it's going to be closer to the fabric. The higher the number you go, the larger the loop. So the higher the pile, if you would, of the punched piece. So you can add a lot of depth to your project by changing the loop height.
So setting one in needlepoint terms would be basket weave then.
Well.
Like the lowest, like flat, close to.
Yeah, yes, it would be flat. Number one is flat.
Yeah,
and then every number you move up, it gets... the loop gets taller if you know. And so, and it also, you add dimension by how many strands of thread you're going to use, because there's three different needles with an altar punch, and that in the three different needles determine how many strands of thread you're going to use. Are you going to use all six? Are you going to use one strand? Are you going to use two strands, three strands, whatever? So that's also how you add depth.
Mm-hmm.
Are we using floss or wool, or what are we using?
You're going to use floss for the most part. And it just really depends. You can use DMC, you can use Weeks Dye Works, you can use Gentle Art, you can even use Sulky Petites, and then Veldani is a big, thread of choice for a lot of punch needlers. Because if you don't use all six strands when you're punching with DMC, you're going to have to separate those strands. And then, you know, you've only got about 8 yards on a skein of DMC, whereas if you're using like a Veldani ball and you're working on a project that uses a lot of one color and you just want a continuous motion where you don't have to stop and separate and cut different lengths and do all of that, you pop a Veldani ball in there and just go to town, and you've got the smaller balls, I think, have about 28 yards on them. And then you go into the number 8s or the number 12s where they got, like, I think close to 70 yards of floss on them, so you can just keep going to town if you'd like.
So this needle then is a continuous feed thing?
Yes, it is.
Oh.
It is. And that's what's nice about it. So you don't have to mess with it until you change colors.
It's sort of like laying a bead of silicone or caulk. That's kind of how
a
punch needle is. I'm doing man terms so he would understand, Dad.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
Thanks so much, Vanna.
it's basically, Gary, if you can picture holding a ballpoint pen in your hand, and you've got the thread coming out the point of the pen and the other thread coming out the top of the pen, and you're just holding that pen to the fabric, and you're just going up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, continual motion. That's what punch needle is.
Okay, so looking at some of these charts in the magazine, then it looks like, so then it literally is just filling in spaces then.
Yeah.
Yep, it's like coloring is what I call coloring with thread.
Okay.
So it's like you're coloring with crayons in a coloring book, and that's where a lot of beginner punch needle folks get their patterns from, are coloring books, because they're thick lined patterns, and they just trace on them and fill them in and go to town, and that's how they learn. But yep, that's exactly what it is. And that's why, and I think one of your other questions to me in the sheet you sent me was, why punch needle versus cross stitch? And for me, anyway, my eyes get really tired by the end of the day, but I still want to do some form of needlework. And I can't do the small counts anymore. So I turned to punch needle because there is no counting. You can do it while you're watching TV, and you won't lose your place, and you won't have to count anything, and you can just keep going. And if you like to stab things, this craft is for you.
Yeah, it is. It is very good about getting your angst out.
It is. It is. It's very relaxing. There's something very, very relaxing about it.
We're doing this on a muslin, or what are we doing it on?
We're doing it on what's called weaver's cloth.
Oh, okay.
And there's a lot of different stores will try to sell fabric. They say it's punch needle fabric and this and that. But you really want to use what's called weaver's cloth. It's a 60-40 polycotton blend. And it's a very tightly woven linen, for lack of a better word. It's rather thin. It's not very thick. But it's because it's so tightly woven, that's what holds those loops in when you start punching. And it's, you just trace your pattern onto it and you go.
Okay. I learned. There seems to be an element of folk art in the designs. Do I see that correctly?
Yes, you do. You do. And I kind of pushed the edge a little bit with that. And the reason why, when I decided to do the magazine, that I wanted to include two mediums, I wanted to include punch needle and I wanted to include cross stitch, was how the magazine basically came to be was there really wasn't anything out there, one, for primitive stitching, and two for punch needle. And so I was part of a primitive stitching group, and everybody was just kind of, you know, throwing ideas around, and somebody had just made the comment, like, there's nothing for primitive stitchers. We've got all the cross-stitch magazines in the world, but there's nothing that really hones in on that particular style. And I opened my mouth and said, well, would anybody be interested if there was? And I did not expect the response that I got. And everybody just jumped on it. And I'm like, well, there's my answer. So now that I opened my mouth, now I'm going to have to do something about it. So that's kind of how the magazine came to be. It was just on a want for it. And there was nothing out there for punch needle. So I thought, well, I'm going to just combine the two, because there's quite a bit of primitive punch needle designs out there. A lot of designers doing that particular style. And I wanted to give them a venue for their work, get them out there, because there are so many wonderful designers for it. And a lot of them do both cross stitch and punch needle as well. So I just wanted to open that up a bit. And that's how the magazine basically started.
So did you have a publishing background?
Nope.
Holy smokes. Really?
No, not at all. No.
Whoa,
no.
That's a mountain to climb. Oh, my.
It was a learning curve, believe me. Oh, my background has been insurance. So nothing to do with publishing. But I did do a lot of, I did know graphic design, self-taught with respect to that. I did a lot of journalism stuff in college and that. And so I thought, well, really, how hard could it be? So I just went ahead and decided to put something together. If I wanted to go out and buy something, what would I want? And our very first issue was a lot different from how the format has. We've revamped the format and kind of streamlined it a little bit more, so it's very consistent. And everybody really seems to like the format, so I'm happy with it. So I'm not going to change it anymore at this point. But it was a learning curve, but I just went ahead and put it together, found a wonderful printer that works with me, that does all my printing for me. They do a beautiful job. They handle all my mailing for me. As far as the subscriber issues and stuff goes. So, but yeah, I was self-taught. That's how I got into it, because basically, and I get a lot of folks that'll come up and ask me, you know, well, you and your staff do a great job. And I think there were a lot of preconceptions that, you know, the magazine was owned by a corporate company, and it's not. It's just me. There is no big company. There is no big staff. I'm it and my copy editor and my designers and Vanna, and that's it. There is no big staff helping me. I mean, everything is done in my home office, and people call in and email, customer service, whatever. They're getting me. They're not getting anybody else. They get me.
Well, if it's any comfort, I've been doing trade magazines forever and worked for the biggest companies in the world, and they're all gone. And we're down to two people and a printer and couple salespeople, and we've gone full circle in terms of magazine production. A lot of it because we can do so much with computers, and with computers. But yeah, even bigger books have gotten down to. I mean, the model anymore is really no more than two editors and an artist, and it's just the way of the world. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's I like to get feedback from everybody. The designers that work with me, that do the designs for the magazine, are wonderful, each and every one. I'm so blessed and thankful for all of them. And, you know, it just comes together, you know, every issue. And I take a lot of feedback from the folks that subscribe and that purchase it, what they'd like to see, what they don't want to see. I don't like to fill it with a lot of advertisements, because it's about stitching, and that's what I want the content to be. I want it to be about stitching. So as much as possible, that's what goes in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's like wall-to-wall projects. There's all kinds of things.
Yep.
Do you find that people do a lot of those projects?
You know, I do. I mean, I do. I mean, I hear back from quite a few people. A lot of them will go ahead and post it on Facebook and some of the stitching groups. And that's kind of how I see and how I gauge which projects they're enjoying doing. Some do several. Some say, I found two that I just can't live without. And I'm good with that. You can't appeal, everything can't appeal to everybody. If somebody goes out and finds one or two things in there that they want to do, or they want to do, you know, do a finishing method that Vana has shared with them, and there's a lot of, I get a lot of feedback on that, they're excited about it. Because, you know, when you go, on average, if you go out and you purchase a pattern, and rightly so, you know, you're going to pay $10 to $12 for, you know, for a pattern, and the magazine, you know, if you pick one out of maybe the 15 to 20 that might be in there, you know, you're getting your money's worth either way, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Do you, does every designer then has to provide the photography and the design, and how does that work, I guess, when it comes to the contributors? Looks like you have a pretty good army of contributors.
I do, and I have quite a few of the designers are regulars in every issue. And I do that for a reason. One, because they are probably, you know, some of them are the top in the genre. And two, they're very well liked by a lot of stitchers. And I know that's who they want designs from. So I like to keep that current for them. The designers, I like to give them a little bit of free range with what they want to do with their project. So a lot of them will go ahead and stage their own models. I don't want them to have to mail them to me, then, you know, me go ahead and do all the photography and then mail it back to them. My biggest fear is it's going to get lost in the mail, and I don't want that to happen. So they do such great jobs of staging their work because they're, most of them are doing this for a living, so they are staging their own model shoots for their patterns that they put out there through the shops and distributors anyway. So a lot of the designers do all their own. They do their own photography. They follow the template that we send them. They fill in all the information, what's missing. My copy editor, Sally, and I fill in, and we'll do the narratives and all of that. But, yeah, they do a lot of their own instructions and provide all the materials information because I send them a template and I say, fill it out on the template, send it back to us, and then we'll take it from there.
So that means this thing that Vana did, you put that all together, Vana?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Yep. Vana writes it up. I don't, when,
wow.
when,
Vana.
I asked Vana. Yeah. She does an amazing job, doesn't she? She does all the pictures. She does all the narrative, and I told Vana initially when I invited her in, I don't want to change the narrative because not everybody can write instructions and things that well. So that's with some of the designers, you know, we have to step in and grammatically correct things. With Vana, we don't have to do that. And I wanted Vana's article to come across how Vana talks, how she relates to the, you know, and her, how she does her blog, how she does her floss tube. I wanted Vana to come across. I didn't want it to be a generic form of this is Vana. I wanted it to be Vana. So all of that's in there is Vana.
Mm-hmm. True. Indiana True. Hick.
That's right. I mean, we go ahead and do the layout, but we every word in that layout is Vana's words. She does the photos. She does the instructions. That's all Vana.
Yep.
Man, that's just impressive, Vana. Wow.
I know.
No, I knew that. No, I think. Well, we've already talked about this on a show. This the one that's in the summer issue, that box mm-hmm. thing you did. I think it's about
the coolest
thing.
Oh yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yep. Yep.
That is amazing.
For a hick from Indiana, damned impressive. Let me just say.
I know, right? I know, right?
He does a great job.
You guys are making me blush. I just like, my whole thing about stitching is just that I just, or finishing or whatever, is that I just love it. You know what I mean? I just love it. That's just my thing. It's my Calgon moment, and I love it. And I think that's what appeals to people. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But I love it. And I think that my enthusiasm for it just translates somehow, I guess.
Nope, it does.
So, Deb, your own stitching. Mm-hmm. Did you start out cross stitching? What's your history there?
Well, I started out, believe it or not, I was 10 years old and in Girl Scouts. And I had a Girl Scout leader that taught us how to do embroidery. So that's what I learned first. And then when I got to be 18, 19, I came across cross-stitch. And I'm like, oh, this not the stamp cross-stitch. I wasn't a big fan of that. But I saw the counted cross-stitch, and I'm like, I have to try this. And as soon as I tried it, I was hooked. So I've been stitching for over 40 years, cross-stitching.
You went cross-stitch, and then the embroidery just fell to the wayside then.
Once I got into cross-stitch and I liked all the fine detail, not that you can't do it with embroidery, but I liked the neatness of the cross-stitching. And I started out on Aida, so everything was perfect. I'm kind of weird like that. It's like my stitches have to be perfect or I'm going to rip them out and do them over again. It's not that I wouldn't do embroidery again, but I really got into cross-stitch, and now that I'm doing punch needle as well, I'm almost kind of leaning now more towards punch needle than cross-stitch sometimes. So, I just don't have enough hours in a day to do it all.
Yeah, I got that sense that the orientation is more punch needle. I could just tell when you're talking about it how much you
did. Oh, for me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I mean, I design cross stitch. I mean, that's when I first started my company. I started out designing cross stitch, not primitive style cross stitch, because I don't really pick a genre that's I'm this or I'm that. It's whatever strikes me. So I can do something primitive, and I've plugged in a few designs into the magazine when I had a designer that life happens and couldn't meet the deadline. I had to come up with something. But I like all different types of cross-stitch designs. So when I was designing initially, and Hoffman was carrying my stuff, it was not primitive. And then when the magazine came about, it's like, I can't do both. I have to pick one or the other. So I kind of let the designing part go and focused more on the magazine. I'm slowly kind of gravitating towards punch needle just because my eyesight can't take the tiny stitches as much anymore. So I'm just kind of gravitating, so at least I can do some type of needle.
Do designs still fall out of your head, though? I mean, do you still...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
All the time. I have a sketchbook that's just kind of filled with stuff. And it's at some point, I'd like to kind of, when I get things kind of squared away a little bit better, life just has been so hectic and so busy. Family stuff comes up and, you didn't expect, and it just takes more and more hours in a day away from you. So the magazine takes up a lot of my time. But, yes, I still do want to dabble with the designing, yeah.
Now, quarterly magazine, do we look at 6 times a year at some point, or is that really where you want to be at with this?
I think for right now I'm probably going to stay quarterly. I was doing 5 issues when I initially started this next year will be 5 years already. When I initially started this in 2015, I was going to do 5 issues a year. I was going to do the spring, summer, fall, winter, and then do a Christmas holiday issue separate. Because of this mess up the first year with the mail, because of the holiday season, it just really threw a wrench into the mailing, and I did not like how that turned out. So I decided to combine the Christmas and winter issues together. So that issue is basically a double issue compared to the other. So most of the first 3 issues, like spring, summer, fall, usually will have anywhere from 15 to 18 projects in each issue. And then the Christmas winter issue generally will have anywhere from 28 to 30.
So.
It's double. So it's like doing 5, but I'm printing 4.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Boy, that's a lot of projects. Holy smokes.
It is. It's a lot of projects. Yep. It's a lot of projects. And I try to equally distribute them. So I've got half punch needle, half cross stitch. And I think now, because of the punch needle, there's a big resurgence with punch needle. And believe it or not, and I'll say StitchCon one more time. When I was there, you would be amazed at how many cross stitchers wanted to learn how to punch needle. And I spent more time teaching people how to punch needle than I did doing cross stitch at a cross stitch retreat. So it was a lot of fun, though. It was a lot of fun. People were on, wanting to learn. And we're starting to see a lot of people say, hey, I need to try that. And they're giving it a shot, so it's really kind of exciting to see it making a comeback. And the designers are wonderful; they're looking more like works of art now with the color palettes and things. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, no, I have to say in the summer issue, the passing the time one, Patsy, mm-hmm. Rose Clay. Yeah, Rose Clay. That's the one I keep stopping at when I look at it. That's a little girl or something swinging in a tree. I like that one. Yeah.
Yeah, it's done in silhouette. Very simple, but it just, there's something about it. You need to try punch needle, Gary.
Yeah, because I need to try one more technique. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need.
You can do it.
Yeah, I'm only up to 20. I need 21 of them. Yes. Mm-hmm. No, but I'm a firm believer that you need to try other techniques. I think it keeps you fresh. I think it improves stitching overall. There's a lot of people believe that you stick with one and get really good at it. I think you try many and you get better, even at the one that you love the most. You get better at it for having done the others. You just get better at manipulating thread and dealing with ground cloth and. No, I'm not going to do it. No, no.
I'm going to have to mail Gary a punch needle and some weaver's cloth. And
I was just going to say, I'll just send him. I sent him a care package today. I just ought to just send you my punch needle and let you try it. You would like. I think that you would like it. Do you have the magazine in front of you, Gary?
Right here.
Okay. Well, look at Michelle Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
She is one of the, I think she is the preeminent designer in punch needle, because she is a, you know, she's a classically trained, I guess, artist. She does beautiful pen line drawings, watercolors, and her punch needles, they're a bear to punch because there's a lot of different colors. But when you get done with one, it looks like a watercolor painting.
And that's what she calls her painting with threads is what she calls it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and she uses all DMC. She does not use over dyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
She does not use the Veldani. She does not use any of that. She uses all DMC threads.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. Her work is just, and she has been in every issue with me. She is just, and people are just amazed at just how beautiful her stuff is. And her stuff, I wouldn't call it quote unquote primitive style. She's more folk art.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with pushing the limit on that. I like to kind of push it a little bit. It doesn't have to be all the, you know, the older, you know, simple stuff. I mean, some folks like that challenge, and her patterns are just amazing and gorgeous. And yeah, she's brought a lot of people back to punch needle. She really has.
Yeah. And I've done a couple of hers. Actually, I bought them from her Etsy shop. One was Love You More or Love You to the Moon Back or something. I did that one from my, yeah, it was beautiful. And it took me a long time to punch. I think her punch needle's a little bit bigger than on average than what most people's punch needles are, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so it's a lot of punching. You use a lot of thread, but they are absolutely gorgeous pieces of work when you get done with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and her art, I mean, she's actually got a quilt fabric line too. I don't know if your shop carries it or not, but her stuff has been picked up, and there's a fabric line for quilting with some of her artwork that is just amazing.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I've seen it, but we don't carry it. But you know, I'm doing the web design now. Maybe I can just start ordering stuff without them knowing. You know,
there you go. Yeah.
See, this is why I said because Miss Willpower here is about to go nuts.
There you go. Yeah, and she's another one. Because initially, when I had met Michelle, I had talked to her and said, you know, because people kept writing me, going, "Does she do her stuff in cross stitch? Can we get it in cross stitch?" And I'm like, as of right now, she doesn't know how to do that. Well, I said, Michelle, this is something for the future. You might want to think about, you know, maybe there's a way we can do this, because cross stitchers are going nuts for your patterns, but they don't do punch needle, but they want to cross stitch them. And she's teamed up with So Much to Love, who is the gal that she makes beautiful project bags. She is now converting some of Michelle's designs to cross stitch. So it's slowly happening. Slowly happening.
Yeah. Well, and you picked up Teresa Colgate, which I think that was a good move on you. Mm-hmm. You know, that was great because, she does cross stitch and punch needle and rug hooking and everything. And mm-hmm. her stuff is very, very, I love her stuff. No matter in what media it's in, she does a beautiful job.
She does. And if she does a design for the magazine, she's been with me from the beginning also. And if she does a design in punch needle, she asks, well, is it okay if I release it in cross stitch? I'm like, have at it. You know, mm-hmm. make everybody happy. Make everybody mm-hmm. happy.
Yeah.
So if it shows up in the magazine in punch needle, she'll release it in cross stitch and vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a lovely lady. I finished something for her recently, and she's just really nice lady to work with.
Yes, she's wonderful. She's wonderful.
You do finishing, Bonna?
I know. I know, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Wow. What a talent.
I know you ought to do that for a living, Bonna. Yeah.
I know, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
I know you should.
All right, Deb, thanks. Wow. I'm learning. This was fun. I learned a lot of things here.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Gary, for having me. I appreciate it.
It was fun, Deb.
Yeah.
It was fun. Well, this is the first time Vanna and I have actually ever talked to each other, like, in person.
Oh, really? Oh, geez.
Everything's been by email. Everything's been by email, so.
Yeah, everything has been by email.
Well, this is just a heartwarming moment, then.
Do you have a tear in your eye, Gary?
It's got all the feels.
It's got all the feels.
No, I just, my face is flushed, but no tears yet.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. You have to go another step to get the tear. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thanks, Deb. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much, Gary. I appreciate it.
And thanks to The Attic for sponsoring the show. And thanks for listening. And remember, Fiber Talk Made Me Buy It gets you off the hook.
Mm-hmm. Every time. That's every right. time.
All right. Thanks for listening.